Good evening and welcome to Good News Updates from Living Compassion. My name is Michael Gray and I'm excited to announce that tonight we have with us Trish Bruxport-Colligan, who is a musician in Iowa. Hi, Trish.
Hello. How are you this evening?
I'm great. Great to have you on the air.
Thank you. Good to be with you all.
Great. How is Iowa today?
You know, we are having one of our famously beautiful autumn days. We have about three that happen between the humidity of summer and the snow flies. And today, it's just gorgeous. The trees are starting to change, and the sun is bright. So it's beautiful here.
That's wonderful. That's great. Trish, I know you a lot through your music, and I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about how you found out about Sherry Huber and Living Compassion and all that.
Well, I would love to. Thank you. I was thinking about this. We were we had just moved to the Twin Cities of Minnesota, and my husband was in seminary. And in his first class, it was a Howard Thurman class, actually, one of his co-students handed him Sherry's book, That Which You Are Seeking Is Causing You to Seek. And both Richard and I just thought, oh my goodness, we could go on silent retreat with just the title of that book for a week and reap so much. So reading it was a grand experience and really sort of sprinkled throughout like the second half of my pregnancy and into the very early days as a young mama. Our son now is seven, Sam. And so it began to just be woven in me little by little in a really pivotal time in my life of so much transition, birthing, yes, physically, but emotionally and spiritually and mentally.
Yes.
And the time came when I was getting ready to write and collect music for a CD that I did called Splash.
Yes.
And I think Sam was about, I was trying to think back, maybe 2 years old.
Uh-huh.
And so I had been gestating with Sherry's words. And I knew I was walking along a beach in northern Minnesota and by a lake. And I knew that I would not put any word on this CD that I myself would not want to hear when I was at my most vulnerable.
Wow.
So it needed to be really true and really vulnerable and open for me, and then setting the space for others to find themselves in that too, hopefully. And I found myself turning back to some of the words and phrases and my experience with Sherry's work.
Yes.
And it was amazing the way music is for me sometimes the experience of making real what I have been meditating with or exploring.
Yes.
And sometimes it comes out later or earlier than I really get it. It doesn't always follow an exact pattern.
Yes.
But it was beautiful to find myself in those words and in that experience.
Uh-huh.
And I thanked Sherry in the liner notes and didn't know if I would actually send a CD or not, but it felt important to put her name there as a teacher and mentor, even just through the words on the page.
Yes.
And then I did sign up at some point on the mailing list, and it could have been even before that maybe Richard did. And we had just moved back to Iowa, and it had been a few months since the CD had come out, and we got a card or an invitation to give and to support financially in some way. And I decided to do it, and in the heat of the moment, decided to enclose a CD to say thank you. And I wanted to give both my financial gift and also the gift of the fruit of one piece of fruit from Sherry's life and her words and her teachings and the way that it moved through me.
Yes.
And didn't really expect to hear back. I'd sent out CDs to a couple of other people that I'd mentioned and didn't hear anything, and thought, oh yeah, the volume of mail that authors or other musicians get, it's just, you know, too great to really reply. But all of a sudden, I started getting emails from people saying, I heard about you from Sherry Huber, and I thought, something's happened somewhere.
Something happened.
Yeah.
Yes,
and so
I
through the process, go ahead.
I remember her talking about it on Open Air, and it was a very enthusiastic response. Yes, indeed.
Yeah, it was really great to start meeting people through email and conversation that way as people found me then through that. I think it was through that Open Air episode. And then it just, the relationship continued. It felt like a real heart connection.
Yeah.
With Sherry and with the monks and with all of Living Compassion. And I just count all of you as my soul family, my sangha, my heart friends. So it's been a wonderful, beautiful journey to this point.
Yes, really wonderful, and fun for me on many levels. Your music to me is just so inspiring, and I'm often in tears after a few notes into the song.
Mm.
And there's something about it that really touches, as you say, that really open, vulnerable part within me. And it's often a very letting go, releasing moment. It's really wonderful.
Mm. Well, I'm so glad. Thank you.
You're welcome. And I'm so excited, too, because you came to the Bridge Walk last year, you and Richard, and performed, and you'll be there again this year.
Yes. Yes, we are very excited. We are very excited to come back and be with you all in person again and sing and dance and laugh. And yeah, it'll be wonderful.
Yeah, a few short weeks. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Trish, that's a really inspirational story, and it's been great to have you on the air tonight.
Thank you so much. I look forward to being with you very soon.
Great. And we're going to close with one of your songs called Coming Home, which is on the Splash CD, which is available from Keep It Simple on the Living Compassion website.
Sounds wonderful. Thank you. Have
great.
A great night there.
Okay. Thank you, Trish.
Bye-bye.
Good night. Good evening, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good evening, Sherry.
Boy, was that fun.
That was a lot of fun.
I'll tell you, that's just, I love that CD.
Yeah.
I cannot tell you how much, I mean, I love their other music too. Don't get me wrong, but that CD, I have that same experience that you mentioned. Every time I listen to it, I go through all the emotions and just come out of it just happy, grateful to be alive, ecstatic to be a human being. It's just the best.
Yeah, it's like a cleansing somehow. It is.
Yeah, and they're just so. It's just so hopeful. So, you know, just reminds a person of the best that we have in us as human beings. What our potential is. You know, what's available to us.
Yes. Yes. Oh. And it's so fun for me, the connection with practice and reading your books and the kind of gestating, and as Trish was talking, sort of it becomes kind of a weaving of a thread through our lives.
Yeah. And those kinds of connections that have that sort of meant to be feeling about.
Yes.
Them. Yeah. Next week, if you help me remember, I'll tell you another story that is like that. That is a favorite of mine.
Another story about meant to be. Will that be enough?
About meant to be and those kinds of connections and that sort of thing. But
okay.
Not tonight, because I know we have other things we're supposed to be doing.
We have three colors.
Yes, we're not here just, we are here just to have a good time. Almost forgot there.
Can I tell you a little story first?
Oh, please.
So I notice a story often going on from conditioned mind that goes along the lines of, yes, you're practicing and you meditate and you go to group, the inevitable, but nothing is changing and nothing is really different. And then I have an experience where it's kind of obvious that that I'm feeling adequate in a way that in the past I know I wouldn't be.
Yes. Yes, something happens and you watch yourself be in that situation, whatever it is, and you're different.
Yeah.
You just know you're different.
Yeah. The words that came to mind is more of an ability to respond rather than just react.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you're there for it. You're present to it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Instead of just going unconscious and letting karma and conditioning take over and have their way with the situation and you along with it.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, it's a great, great realization.
Uh-huh. And it's one of those, I project, where if somebody said, well, now what exactly is different? You have to say, well, it's just different.
I'm just keeping practicing. It's all
mm-hmm.
I'm doing.
Yeah. Well, and of course, we hear that a lot. Or a variation on that. The one that just came to mind for me was people will say, you know, I don't know what it is. I sit on a cushion, I meditate, and nothing happens. Nothing happens. And yet, when I'm meditating, my life works. And when I don't meditate, my life doesn't work. So even though I don't know what's going on, I'm going to keep doing it. Because I know the difference in my life, and that's it exactly.
Wonderful.
It is. We're very, very fortunate. We're fortunate that it is possible for human beings to awaken and end suffering. Just an incredibly wonderful aspect of being a human being.
Yes, and for me, in addition to that, having such a clear roadmap that you're providing for us.
Well, that the Buddha provided for us.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you, thank you. I feel like, you know, kind of a one of those crossing guards. Cool, you know, got my little reflector vest on and my paddle, so, and so I can stand there and go that way, that way, go that way.
Yeah.
And we are blessed in that. We really are fortunate that and people will say, you know, now. Isn't it sort of separating to identify yourself as a Buddhist? And my response is, anything can be if somebody wants to look at it that way. But I'm a Buddhist because I am so deeply grateful that the Buddha did what the Buddha did in order to realize all that was realized in order to make liberation available to me when I was ready to begin looking at that level. And so it's not that it's the only path to liberation, but it's the one that worked for me. And so I would like to devote all of my time and energy to the best that I can, making that same opportunity available to others. Because again, you know, it doesn't speak to everybody, which is the great news about how many different possibilities there are for us. But for people like me, then this is a perfect path. It's a perfect way to practice and to move into that experience of awakening and ending suffering. So I feel lucky.
Me too. Me too. Big gratitude all around.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, we got four callers here.
Right. If we keep talking, they're just going to line up there, huh?
Okay.
Maybe we better say hello.
Okay, first caller, you are now live on the air. Could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Anna from Boston.
Hi, Anna.
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
What's going on in Boston?
You know, a lot. I don't know. It's nice here, actually. I just moved here, so it's a beautiful city. Speaking of feeling lucky, I feel really, really lucky to be able to call you guys tonight.
Because you just moved a long ways away.
Yeah, and for the past, you know, 5 or 6 years, or I've been able to practice, you know, really close to Sangha and be able to go to the Zen Center, and now I don't really have that same sort of support, so it's just really, I just feel, oh, this is so great to be able to call.
Staying connected is a good thing, isn't it?
It is, and I feel a lot of gratitude for this, you know, myself also for picking up the phone call, because there was a lot of resistance.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
A lot of
resistance. You don't have anything to say.
Yeah.
Yeah, a whole lot of resistance. So, it's sort of, that's one of the things I think conditioning is sort of using. It's like sitting the other day and doing the daily recollection, and it was like, I don't know, it's just the story it uses, something like, oh, you know, you don't really, you know, this isn't really for you, you're such a fake, like, it's this whole thing, and because it knows that's what's going to, you know, press the karmic buttons, but, so just then I decided I'm going to call, so I called, so.
Yeah, do you get the Voices cartoons?
I do,
yeah.
I do.
So somebody wrote in, and I happened to, I don't know who it was, but we get sort of information about things that people write in about different things. So an email came through saying that somebody wrote in and said, loves the voices, but how do you tell which voices are, in our terms, bull hockey? And and the encouragement that went back was, you know, that'd be a great question to ask on the radio show, because
uh-huh.
I mean, that's a question just about everybody has.
Yeah.
Where is this coming from? Is this valuable information? is this helpful? Should I be listening to this? And of course, one of the things that I project you caught on to is that the voice is calling you, you. You know,
yeah.
Oh, this isn't for you. You're such a it's like, pardon me.
Yeah.
You know, could we wait for me to say this really
yeah.
isn't for me? I'm such a fake. And
yeah.
of course, the answer is no, because you're not going to say that.
Right.
Because who you
right.
are, yeah, who you are is the person who chooses to practice, the person who picked up the telephone. That's who you
right.
are. And so the
yeah.
voice that's trying to convince you that you're somebody else is
mm-hmm.
working really hard to make you think that you're not who, in fact, when you're quiet and you look, you know you are. The person who wants
right.
to practice. Person who wants to
wake right.
up. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's really helpful to just to hear, and perhaps I should practice saying that to myself too, because it's just it's just this incessant, just
yes.
it's like keeps telling me this story about who I am, what my life is, and it's not true. It's just not true, and
that's right. That's why now. You see, it's a perfect time of year to catch on to this, isn't it? Because this is what's called the media when it's outside your head, right?
Right.
So you just
yeah.
say something, and then you say it over and over and over and over, and pretty soon, guess what? People start to believe it because they've heard it so often. It must be, you know, where have I heard that? I've heard that. So, yeah, well, I guess that's true because, you know, everyone's saying it. And so, So, and then it just slides into that's true. And it's based on, you know, the media's ability to do that is based on exactly what you're saying. Just say something to somebody over and over and over and over, and you'll do a couple of things. You will wear them down.
Right.
You will finally convince them it must be true because, my God, that's all I ever hear.
Yeah.
And it's not. It's not true. It's the
it's
same
not.
Kind of propaganda, stirring up trouble, trying to make misery, trying to ruin our peace that is so popular throughout culture.
Wow, that's really helpful.
Yeah.
That's really helpful.
So one of the things that I always encourage, and I would encourage you to do, is get
mm-hmm.
a, 'cause since you're new in the area, you probably have more time than you're going to have in a month or so. So get a giant piece of paper, you know, one of those huge tablets, and start
right.
writing down what is true. So the voice
right.
says this, and you write down what's true.
Yeah.
The voice says that, and you go, no, that's not true. That's not what my life is. Then write down what your life is. So that every time
right.
you hear that, it takes you right to that list, and you read what your life really is.
Right. Yeah, and I can see how that would also just be really helpful just to make it clear that, you know, this is, I don't know, somehow to step out of it, because I feel like what's happening a lot is I hear it, I know it's not true, and but I feel like what needs to happen is sort of something more marked, like to get out of the conversation.
Because
it feels like I'm aware that the conversation is going on, and still it's going on.
Yes.
So I think it would be helpful to do something to sort of shift the energy.
Oh, yes, and you're right. I mean, that's what conditioning wants, is for you to stay inside your head,
mm-hmm.
being having your attention captured by that barrage. That's what
right.
it wants. So anytime we can do those kinds of practice techniques, writing it
uh-huh.
down, you know, all that stuff that we do, wearing a ring, you know, writing yourself emails, putting messages on yourself, you know, whatever
yeah.
will help you turn your attention away from that constant conversation and get a different piece of information is hugely helpful. And
yeah.
the resistance to it Oh my God, if you think there was resistance to picking up the phone, wait until you drag out that big old piece of paper and start trying to write down what your life really is.
Yeah.
And I bet way up at the top of the list will be something along the lines of, you know, that is really stupid. I can't believe that you're going to write that stuff on a piece of paper and hang it up. And then what? Somebody's going to come in here and read it. They're going to know you're an idiot.
I'm sure, because I can see it sort of coming up even as you're speaking. It's so predictable.
Yes, it is. All right. Well, take care. Keep in touch.
Thank
with
you.
Us. Let us know how you're doing.
Okay.
If you come up with other great ideas for that kind of thing, call us and let us know what they are. We're always looking for good ways to divert our attention away from that diatribe of misery that conditioning wants us to attend to.
Yeah. Thank you.
Good night.
Okay. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Anna. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have another caller here.
All right.
Okay, next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. This is Catherine from St. Louis.
Hey, Catherine.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. I'm looking at something, and I could use some pointers. Last night, I participated in the first session of my union bargaining committee. The committee just met. We haven't met with the company. And, of course, and I've talked to you about this before, I have a whole lot of fears about losing my job and the money, and a lot of that was going on while I was in the meeting. And something I noticed is that I would come back to the breath and I would try to be aware of what was happening, and it felt like I was either in a subpersonality speaking or maybe thinking, or I was silent. It never felt like the silence or the awareness had anything to offer. Do you know what I mean? Like to offer to like speak an idea.
So it never felt like you came back to center and had something to contribute.
Correct.
Uh-huh.
Correct.
And was that because, was there a feeling that you were always in a personality, whether you were speaking or not?
I would come back and watch. You know, I would come back and take a breath, come back to the breath, and then watch, and like maybe kind of reassure myself a little bit. Okay, take a breath. Everything's okay. And then I would get hooked again into a subpersonality, and that one would speak. It seems to me.
Uh-huh.
You know, maybe.
So you never stayed at center long enough to get a sense of what might have come out from that centered place.
Okay, I think you're right. I think I just I wasn't able to stay there long enough.
Yeah, because you would get triggered by a personality who had something that she wanted to say.
Yeah, and the sub-personality mostly wanting to protect her own, like I want mine, you know, and you know, it just didn't feel good. Nothing felt good. I didn't feel like I was. I felt like I was in there, scrambling to keep mine. It was really rather awful. Kind of an awful experience.
And can I ask you this? Did you feel like you were, that was sort of the tone of the group, or do you feel like you were the one kind of bringing that?
I was one of the people bringing that. I think there were others. It sounded to me, or I'm projecting that some other people were doing that too.
Uh-huh.
Some did not seem to be doing that.
And which is interesting is that there was some sense of there was enough disidentification to have a feel for different perspectives.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if you had been identified with the same personality all the way through, you would probably have had the same projections.
Oh, okay.
So that perception that you're reporting tells me that you were, in fact, going either, you know, you were obviously making forays into disidentification. Because you would come back and be aware of the breath and know that you were there and know that you were breathing and have a sense of what was going on with you and be able to tell what you'd been saying. You know, so and also having different projections onto different people there.
Mm-hmm.
So all of that tells me that either you were, in fact, going between personalities or you were... there is no or. You were going between personalities and making forays into disidentification.
Mm, okay.
Now, here's my real question. Because that's good, isn't it? I mean, to be in a situation
mm-hmm.
like that and have any consciousness at all is just a triumph, don't you think?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. Because it's really scary and really threatening and everything in a person just wants to go into survival and do whatever is required to make sure I'm okay.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
Now, then what you said was it really didn't feel good to be in that survival mode, that
mm-hmm.
that sense of you know, women and children first after me.
Yeah.
Orientation
yeah.
to life.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so tell me what it's like to realize that, because I'm projecting that at least part of you is realizing that from a place other than self-hatred.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, I think you're right. I don't think that it is self-hatred. I think it's coming from, I don't want to live this way. I don't want to be in this space. I don't want to treat other people this way, and I'm happy with this. And it's not a beating myself up. It's just an awareness that this does not feel good.
Yeah. I talk about that for myself as a place of disappointment. So
mm-hmm.
it's being
mm-hmm.
disappointed that I went to that place rather
mm-hmm.
than letting self-hatred come in.
Mm-hmm.
It's a sadness that we can be that way. You know, once we know that there's a better way that we can be, then there's a sadness that comes, a disappointment that, you know, in this situation I didn't come from that better self that I know exists.
Mhm. I guess I get into those situations and think, I don't know how to get to that better self. I don't know how to be there.
Well,
I mean, that's what I'm hearing. And, yes.
May I?
Yes.
Yes, you do know, and you are doing it. This is the process.
Oh,
to be in a situation like that and to watch that survival, ego-identified, conditioned karmic force come in and take over, to remember, to disidentify, to come back to the breath, to have a sense, to watch yourself get pulled into it again, to come back to the breath, to see it, to not to let it become self-hatred, but to see it for what it is and to know that you want to be different. That is the work.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Because mm-hmm. we can know that we want to be different from a place of compassion, and that's where difference happens.
Okay.
From when we claim that we want to be different, but really it's a place of self-hatred, whether we are colluding with the self-hatred or identified with the person who's being beaten, that's a place of staying the same.
Mhm. Mhm. I guess I was falling for this idea of someone coming from a centered place would have all these brilliant ideas about how to fix, you know, the union contract, and, you know,
which is no doubt true.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
And I guess I'm feeling this urgent that I'm supposed to do that, and so I can be the hero kind of thing.
Yeah, and of course that's from that other place where change doesn't happen.
Yes.
So
from
center, would there be that kind of awareness? Absolutely. Does that mean anybody would be interested in it? No. It does not.
Oh.
So, you know, Gandhi could walk into the meeting, and there is very little likelihood that everybody in that meeting would say, oh, good idea, let's do what he said.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's one aspect. The other aspect, of course, is the urgency to get to that place of clarity is not really urgency to get to clarity. It is ego coming in to say, ha, now
mm-hmm.
here's a way to snatch this back into suffering, away from freedom. So
sometimes,
go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, sometimes I feel like just turning my back and walking away from all this because it's too painful. And other times I get this sense of, you know, I could just let all of this go and let other people take care of this, and I can go garden. And there's something very attractive about that second idea.
Yes.
And at the same time, I think, well, I do have a responsibility. I am an officer. I'm expected to do this kind of thing.
Well, to me, the place that if I have a wish, where I want you to go is, this is an incredible opportunity for me to free myself from the self-hatred that is going to try to ruin my life regardless of my life circumstances.
Okay.
So can I practice, not setting up a standard, not with self-judgment, but can I practice staying as open-hearted and conscious and present as I can be through this process?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's my goal. And that's the best I can bring to this situation.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I feel inspired by that.
Good.
That's what I want to do.
Don't let it turn into a contest.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
And when you're not at meetings, don't forget to garden.
Okay. Okay, I won't. Thank you very much, Jay.
Thank you. Good night, Catherine.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Catherine. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we're going to take a quick break here, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
The Zen Blues Quartet is a collaborative music project celebrating life and the music of the blues. Good musicians and good friends coming together to make something really beautiful simply because we can. Zen Blues Music. For myself, as a Zen student, I see a direct connection between playing the blues and awareness practice, because for me, both seem to require a willingness to be really present in the moment. Zen Blues Quartet is proud to sponsor Open Air Talk Radio with Sherry Huber, as we firmly believe that the quality of your life is dependent on the focus of your attention.
What a life!
please visit us at www.zenbluesmusic.com for more information about our project.
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber.
That's kind of what we were saying earlier, isn't it? What a life.
What a life. And I always remember that line from, not sure which book, but it's on a recent calendar, that life is a tidal wave.
Really?
Life is a tidal wave, and I can kind of sit there and bemoan how I'm being crushed and overwhelmed again and again, or I can learn how to surf and recognize that this is life, and I have this moment, and how am I going to respond?
And that I have to, if I'm not going to be overwhelmed, I need to travel at the speed of light.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
The speed of life.
Speed of life.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's great. That's great. And the speed of life says that there are four more callers here.
Well, we better get speedy.
Okay. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. It's John in Los Angeles.
Hey, John.
Today is my birthday.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. So I'm calling.
Woo-hoo.
Happy
birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear John. Happy birthday to you.
Wow.
And usually I do my, and many, 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 but I'm not going to do that because we have a finite amount of time.
I hear that.
But I do hope. For as many, 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 many more as you choose.
Wow. Thank you. That's the best birthday gift I could have gotten.
Oh, great.
Thank you. So I'm calling because I've been noticing something in practice that's been going on for quite a while, and it's sort of reflecting in small places and large places, and I wanted to call in, and because it was my birthday, I wanted to just touch base with you on the practice aspect of it, if that was okay with you.
Sure.
I'm about 20 days into the 30-day retreat, and, you know, it's really about, you know, noticing how I'm doing things, and, you know, we've talked recently a lot about going through sort of dark periods and sort of being caught, and probably the last, I'd say 6 months, maybe longer, I am, you know, pretty identified, and in that time, I've been making a lot of efforts to, you know, commit to practice and be as compassionate with myself as I can during what's been a fairly hard and challenging period of my life. And going through the retreat and sitting really regularly and sort of noticing sort of the sort of pattern of how things arise and dissolve, I kind of started to notice that when I'll be sitting and I'll notice that my eyes have drifted off to the right and I'm thinking about whatever it is I'm thinking about, and I come back, that this sort of happened to me for the last 6 months. And I'm just sort of looking up and going, how did that happen? You know, where was I distracted to? And the specific piece of content for me which started this was the end of a relationship. And I realized that actually what happened was actually not dissimilar to my meditation practice in that I got caught. I kind of went unconscious. I stopped listening to what was going on and sort of was just behaving, and then the relationship came to an end, and the heartbreak of that sensation in my body and spirit that keeps the story perpetuating over and over in my head actually brought me to an awareness that I had kind of gone unconscious, and the whole time I was kind of bemoaning, how did I arrive here?
Mm-hmm.
And what I realized is that I arrived here because I kind of went unconscious.
Yeah.
And it's been a source of tremendous suffering for me the last 6 months because of the recent cartoon that you sent out about, you know, the voices saying, or not the cartoon, the commentary about the opportunity to practice is, you know, you have this really well-intentioned sort of persona of somebody who really wants to end suffering. Like, I can only speak for myself, but I particularly want to end suffering. And I'm committed to that. And then there's this voice that comes in and goes, well, you should know how to do that because you're doing it and you're not. In fact, you're suffering. So that just proves you're not doing it.
Uh-huh.
You know, and it becomes part of that sort of vitriolic, dark place, which I've been spending quite a bit of time in. And I'm just sort of poking my head out of, hopefully.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Head poking.
Yeah. And so, okay. So you know, Do you know, or let me ask you, what is your relationship with this? See, I'm trying not to lead the witness, but
okay.
I'm going to also try to ask an intelligent question. What is your relationship with those voices? In other words, intellectually, you know that vitriolic voices are not a part of the deal.
Right.
And yet, they are able to take you into unconsciousness. How is that?
Well, again, looking sort of at the how recently, there's two sides, I guess, I could respond to that. One is there was a very subtle transition, which I just didn't notice, which took me into a habitual place, and I sort of let it happen. I don't particularly know. It's sort of that drifting quality that I've noticed when I'm sitting, which is one second you're counting your breaths, and the next second you're thinking about Fenway Park. There's just not a lot of correlation, or at least I haven't been able to refine it to noticing.
Okay, so that's a really important one, isn't it? That point of departure that you've noticed is a constant with what happens to you.
Yeah, that's there, actually one side, absolutely one side.
Yeah, you're there and then you're not.
And then you're back, actually, and that's but the other side is that I have a fairly intimate relationship with these voices, which accommodates and if not enables them. In that, at a certain point, I mean, if I'm being specific, there's only a certain amount of energy I think I can devote to beating myself up over having lost the person that I loved through going unconscious. But the process to which I'm observing is that the story repeats in my head over and over and over again to the point where it's punishing.
Oh yeah.
And it's but I can watch it and I can go, well, how is this serving me? It's just. And it's funny because at the end of my meditations, I always emphasize that line, you know, if I'm suffering, it's because I'm choosing something over ending suffering, and I'm aware that I am choosing, not consciously, but there's some aspect that's choosing to engage with this dialogue, to hear it, and to let it happen.
Okay, so I'm going to suggest something to you, and that is that what. The way those two things go together is that, and we'll just use simple language so that there's the best chance that we understand each other.
Okay.
What happens is that you're there, and then that drifting, where you're actually going in that drifting, is into ego. So it's like a sleep state.
Yeah, I hear that.
Yeah. So you don't notice that you're no longer you. You don't notice that you have become hypnotized and fallen into an ego identification.
Right.
And what I mean by that specifically is the illusion of a self that is separate from life. Okay? So that's
so not a specific sub, not a sub, but you're saying the aspect of being of feeling or thinking that I'm separate from life.
Yeah, well, of identifying with ego.
Okay.
So let's just call the authentic self John. And so John is sitting there meditating and present, counting, present, aware of the body, aware of the breath, knows where he is, right there. Okay? And then there is that distraction. And the drifting. And what happens is John is left and attention, awareness, goes to ego identification.
Yeah.
All right? And that is who engages in that relationship with the voices.
I think that's actually who engages in general because, I my feeling sense is that when I drift in sort of my daily life, my which I think happens often, and I can only, again, this particular content is I can say that I drifted right into actually creating what I didn't want. Which was
of course.
I wanted
now,
to love this person, and I stopped.
Let's stay with this, okay? John wanted to love this person. But ego is not served by loving this person.
Yeah.
The illusion of a separate self has its existence in suffering.
Yeah.
So the drift, if we're not vigilant, then the habit is to drift into identification with that illusion of separate self that is egocentric karmic conditioning.
Right.
Okay? And so there it is. There's the drift. And what ego wants is suffering, problems, things not work, for to be a victim, to be able to victimize, to be dramatic, okay? Because that's what makes it the center of the universe.
It has an addictive, you know, I've never had particularly an addictive issue in my life. I have a lot of friends who I've worked with who have, but from their descriptions of it, my projection is it has an addictive quality.
Exactly.
Because there's some part to me that finds it, like actually there's a persona that sits there and is kind of scratching its head going, what are you doing?
Oh.
You know, what's going on? Why do you want to, you know, beat yourself up over this for the thousandth time? Or why are you have, and it's again that commentary is you have the experience. The only projection I'm coming up with in talking to you right now, sort of feeling I get is some aspect of isolation in terms of like at least where I'm living and how I'm living is supporting my drift. But
everything about life supports it as we fall for that first split second of drift.
Drift. And so this is a Zen thing. This is a known Zen thing. The drift is a known Zen thing.
It will be soon. Yes, of course. In fact, in the 12 nirdanas, in the chain of dependent origination, the first, I think that this is true. God knows I'm not an expert on this stuff. But the first thing is ignorance.
Mm.
And that's the turning. So yes, I think the drift is known.
But when you've talked to me before about, you know, the practice is learning to direct your attention.
Yes.
For me, the experience I have is that conditioning seems to use this as a focus of why I'm not practicing well.
Well,
because,
now
you know,
that
I should be able to do this,
That's a different. Now that is a different subject. It is a related subject, but
right.
It is a different subject.
Okay, well, I'll stick with it.
Okay. Well, but just very quickly, the one of the fastest ways. So let's go with other addictions. Okay, you're addicted to drugs,
okay.
And whatever your drug of choice is, you're addicted to that. And every time you're not vigilant, every time your mind wanders, that's where it goes, to getting high, to getting the whatever it is, okay? So that's where it goes. That's the kind of the karmic focus. And so you realize that. You realize that that's the case. You realize you don't want to do that, but you're still being pulled. There's a tremendous draw to that. And then, of course, once you do whatever it is, that's the invitation to the self-hatred. So now it's your fault that you're over there, okay? So the parallel is, so the drift, the karmic drift is to ego identification. So there you go. You go over there. And about the time you realize you're over there, well, you could pop back to center, right? But what you get hit, the next wave you get hit with is, and it's your fault. You know better than this. Why are you doing this? Why are you choosing this? Why would you... And, you know, if drugs are it, then to get away from the voice, you have to do more drugs.
Mm.
So that's the cycle. And the thing that we can know is self-hatred is going to use any and everything all the time to try to capture the attention.
Yeah. So when the voice becomes the drug in a certain way from what you're describing, then it's almost... I mean, the feeling, I mean, you know, we've talked before about depression and that the nature of that. I feel like I just lost 6 months to a drift in that, on one level, there was something actually useful to be learned about observing how I went unconscious. It was an extraordinarily painful way to learn this particular lesson.
Yep. You know what, John? It always is.
I see.
Yeah, that's, you know, my favorite line about we always get hit alongside the head with the size board we need. And it always, invariably, when we're lying there, flat out, our response is, but it didn't need to be this big. But in fact, it did. Because as soon as we get to the other side of it, we realize, you know, life has been trying to give me this information for a long time. And so with this, if I'm on target about this, and this is the point for you, then realizing that the drift is not some inconsequential little thing that happens. It is life and death. And if that inspires you not to allow that drift, it was the right size board.
It's just.
Are you with me?
I'm hearing. I'm hearing that. It's the beginning of, you know, I can only describe that the this is my head. It's like poking your head up a little bit to look around.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of coming out of a period, you know, a long period where I was pretty merciless with myself and continuing the practice with the desire to see how the noticing, at least especially through the retreat, the noticing again of, well, this drift sort of feels like that drift, and that drift sort of feels like it's creating the same kind of, it's not the same content, but it's the same suffering.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, I've lost this woman, but I'm, well, wait, that's the same as the story, but it's the same, you know what I mean? The content all ties together because the process all ties together.
Yes. Now, here's the thing. What I hope for you and for everybody else on the planet is that you take the emotion of all of this and you turn it into a resolve not to let that hateful system do this to you again. That you're going to take all of that energy and turn it into a commitment not to just let the drift happen. Now, maybe you will. Will it catch you? Very likely. Okay? But your commitment is there. Instead of letting all that get turned back against you as if you're a bad, wrong person for letting this happen, you take that emotion and you say, enough, enough.
So one can channel, well, I mean, this is my, I'm just sort of giving back in my own words, is that I can channel grief and the feelings or whatever this content or stories are bringing up and use that as actually a tool for resolve.
Oh, yes. Because you look at that guy and what this system has done to him.
Oh, it's brutal.
It's brutal.
Yeah, really.
You didn't do it to him. That system of survival, that egocentric karmic conditioning, that illusion of a separate self, that's what has done it to him. It fed itself from his misery. So you can make a commitment that you're going to stand up for him. You're going to turn your attention and energy into taking care of him and protecting him rather than letting yourself get lulled into some false sense of, oh, well, and letting him be sacrificed one more time.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of what the grief was that this little person had that survival strategy and that's how it worked for him. And it's just shocking in a certain way.
You know,
it's a powerful process that we go through, and I don't know how easy it is, but the thing about commitment that you're talking about is like in this retreat, how does one make a compassionate commitment and, you know, to self-discipline and actually go through this and continue, especially when it gets really dark, when it gets really dark.
Yeah, and of course what we do is just keep showing up. We pick ourselves up and keep going. We realize what we're up against, that it is an awe-inspiring opponent. It will challenge you. It will demand of you the very best that's in you, which is good because that's what we're going for. and there will be no partial measures. You know, every time you are not there for yourself, that's what's going to happen to you.
It seems to actually escalate, to be honest. It's
It's
not just that every time you're not there, it seems that every time you're not there, it's taking a harder tack to show you that
absolutely.
You're getting off track.
Absolutely. But here's the good news. It only has so much juice. And the reason that it is throwing more at you is that you are getting stronger. And I know it probably doesn't seem that way.
It's so funny,
but it's
you
true.
Were saying that.
Yeah, it's true. true nonetheless. You know,
okay.
what used to cause you to buckle no longer does.
Yeah.
And so it's got to be hitting you with harder and harder and harder stuff. But I can promise you, it has a limited arsenal. And the reason that most people don't end suffering is that they quit too soon. If we stay with it, if we keep coming back, if we use all of this emotion to strengthen our resolve instead of turning on ourselves, then very quickly, we reach the point where we recognize that it's threatening us with old stuff. And there's just that moment of, ha, I got you. You don't have me. I have you. And the shift, the balance of power shifts.
The shift away from drift.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
I'm ready to shift away from drift. So I'm.
Yep. You are. Yeah, you are. All right.
Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you. Happy
Thanks
birthday.
Thanks for the song. I really appreciate it.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us. You're listening to Open Up with Sherry Huber. Sherry, you have a great section in the book, Making a Change for Good, where you talk about many things that are not the point, and then you say that recommitting is the point.
Oh, yeah. It's true, isn't it?
It is true.
Mm-hmm.
It is true.
Because the commitment has the strength and the power, and it wouldn't matter if we did it once every minute. That it,
yeah.
You know, people say, well, yeah, but you know, I commit, and then 5 minutes later, I'm okay. Commit every second. That's
yes.
where you want to be. You want to be in the commitment.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's just that conditioning has us so in a place of believing that we should be finished.
Yes. Yes.
And that's the lie that people stumble over all the time. If I have to say yes, 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 yes with every breath for the rest of my life, what better thing could I be doing?
I agree. Sherry, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be right back.
Right.
Watchdog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Watchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have
now,
three.
I just want to say right before that the sentiments expressed in that last ad, what we do is never more important than how we do it. That's exactly what we've been talking about, isn't it?
Yes. Yes.
And conditioning wants us to believe that how we're doing it is never as important as what we're doing.
Yes.
But the reality is, regardless of life circumstances, how I am with myself is how I am with life, with everyone and everything else, and it's the only thing that's important.
Wow. Really brings it straight to the point, doesn't it?
Sort of does, huh?
Yeah, and pretty simple. Not
it's
real complex.
It's not. It's so simple. Yeah, it is. It is. But, of course, again, we're used to listening to the conversation in our heads. And that's what makes it seem complex. Well, what about that? And, well, what about, yeah, but you said, well, but I don't, but if, yeah, but. And as soon as we engage in that, it's like, oh, yeah, I'm totally confused and overwhelmed. And when, as soon as we drop it, we're right here, and our only response to it is, well, that's so simple. So you have three callers?
Yeah, and about 3 minutes, unfortunately.
3 minutes? Are you serious?
According to my clock.
Oh, my goodness. I did get carried away, didn't I? Sounds like I'm. Well, what do we do? Do we ask them all to come back next week?
Yeah, or we could talk to the first one and
invite the
and invite
back.
All of them to come back next week.
All right. Well, let's do that.
Okay. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry and Michael. This is Nancy from Driftwood. I called last week, and we talked a little bit about some questions I have around mental illness and practice. But what I wanted to say this week is that I am having a wonderful week, and I'm really noticing how all my practice is finally paying off, and I keep coming back to center much more rapidly. And it just, I mean, sometimes almost instantaneously, and then I get to operate from there, and I'm loving it.
Oh, yeah. Now, here's the thing about it, because to me, what you're saying is just key for what we're looking at with practice. You know the old Socrates, this too shall pass?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So when we're in one of those places, like, last week, to realize that this week is coming.
Well, and I will say that one of the worst voices for me is the one that says, you absolutely can't do this thing. And pushing through that takes a lot of energy. So even making the call last week was the effort. Just saying hello was...
Yeah.
And then... When we quit, when I hung up, I just sobbed with, I don't know, release, and then felt hugely better.
Uh-huh.
And I'm just finding that over and over again, that
big letting go.
Yes, and pushing through the resistance.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Just over and over is allowing me to bob back to center.
Yes, yes. And to be down like that and to just say, okay, well, this is where we are. And, we're kind of full circle back to what we were talking about with Anna. You know, what's possible is to say, yep, that's how I'm feeling right now, having a really hard time right now, and this is what I know to be true. And then you just start through the things that you know to be true. You know, it's possible
yes,
to let go. I've let go before. Things are going to be different. I'm going to feel a different way.
And I almost have a friendly relationship with the voices in the sense that when they say something, I definitely hear it spoken as you these days. It used to be I this, I that, but now it's you. And then I go, oh, thanks for the reminder of when it says, no way you could ever do this. I go, oh, yeah, that's right. You're the voice that reminds me, of course I can do it.
Right. I bet they hate that.
And I don't know. They shut up.
Yeah. 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 That's very good. Well, thank you. Thank you for calling back. It's good to, it's good. It's a good reminder that, practice
and
works.
And thank you for the program. And I love the advertising. I love What a Life. And I love what you do is not as important as how you do it. Sometimes that's my favorite part of the show.
Yeah. All right. Thank you so much.
All righty, and thank both of you. Bye.
Uh-huh.
You're welcome.
Good night.
Thanks for joining. Sherry, another great show.
Yeah, it's fun.
I need to come up with a new line besides another great show. And it's really, for me, doing the show really requires me to show up. And as you know, that's its own reward.
Oh, it so is. And it's always great, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, it's always great. When we're here, people have said to me for years, how do you stand to say the same thing over and over and over and over? And my response is, I'm not saying the same thing over and over. Every time I hear it, it's brand new.
Yes.
I'm just as excited about it this time as I was the first time I might have said it. I don't know. I don't remember that. I only know now, and it's true for me now, and I love it, and it makes me happy.
That's good enough, huh?
That's good enough. All right.
Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you, sir. See you next time.
See you next time. Good night.
Night.